Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Beware, spoiler phobes. You've been hacked by a storm of spoilers. This week, we'll be discussing Series 3 of the now Netflix show Black Mirror and how each episode either lived up to expectations for the series or didn't. The discussion will expand to include other episodes of Black Mirror from the previous 2.5 series, so be aware, some spoilers are abound. Just don't block us, please. Hello and welcome back to the Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my favorite piece of technology was my first non-linear editing system. It was called the Casablanca, and it was great.
I'm Joanna Robinson. My favorite piece of technology is actually my tablet. I won't brand it. Let's not give any branding credit anyway. My digital tablet, because I use it to only read comics. That's the only reason I use it. So essentially it's a book that has a million books inside it, and I love it.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm going to brand it, but it's an older piece of technology. My favorite piece of technology was my black MacBook that I had years ago that was stolen out of my car, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
And lost episodes of Film School Rejects podcast went with it. So that was my favorite thing of all time. It was slick.
And we are, of course, discussing technology because this week we are going to be, delving into it and humanity's darker parts, discussing Black Mirror on Netflix. But first, we have our triangle of meta right at the top here. First, I acknowledge that this once was a Game of Thrones podcast that is now covering pop culture. And then I say, Joanna, how are reviews for this experiment?
Hey, guess what? We have no new reviews this week.
Oh,
really?
You listeners, did, oh, I guess on, Halloween guys. Was too soft for you, was it? All right, guys. Hey, guys, well, that one's on you. Let's leave some iTunes reviews. So Joanna has something to read right off the top there. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
she's so good at it.
We'll force her to bring the accents back if you guys need that as like a.
Oh, will
carrot.
We? Oh, are we? Okay.
Oh, really?
And the other point on our triangle is, of course, Mr. Neil Miller, who keeps us updated on our ravens from the land of Westeros. What's going on in Game of Thrones this week, Neil?
All kinds of interesting stuff. There's really two topics I want to talk about. First, though, got to plug Con of Thrones again. Conofthrones.com, which is next year. We're going to be there. It's really, you know, all you need to know at this point. But a couple of spoilery things. First, I want to talk about spoilers, and then we're going to talk about like the concept of spoilers, and right. then we're going to get into some production spoilers. So you don't have to, if you're sensitive to that, you do not have to fast forward to our next segment quite yet, because I actually wanted to put this question out to you guys as to, at least to me, it feels like there's a lot more hand-wringing or distress on the internet this year about spoilers and about major publications putting spoilers in their headlines, which I know is not something that anyone on this podcast does on any major publications, but there are some out there that are doing it. And it's to the point where our good friends over at Entertainment Weekly have actually come out with an article that was just like, be careful what you read on the internet, which interesting, I guess. But I does it feel like there's more out there this year, or does it, or is, are we just seeing more people complaining about it?
I think it's a couple things. I definitely think there is more out there this year, because I was thinking about like what we actually physically saw on camera behind the scenes last year, and it was like the Tower of Joy got filmed, and there was like one or two other things. Oh, the battle, you know, mm-hmm. behind the scenes of the battle. So we knew about some details of the battle, though some we had wrong, and we knew the Tower of Joy was coming, but like we didn't know for sure that, you know, Sansa was going to be involved in the battle. Like, there was a lot of stuff that we didn't know. And I won't get into spoilers for this upcoming season, but there has been a lot of video and photography of huge, huge things that have been out there. And I'm not here on a spoiler podcast to be like, how dare they? But, like, I can understand why fans are like, whoa, I didn't want to know that, you know? And I also think major outlets are realizing every year after year how lucrative it is to post spoilers. I think last year was the first time we saw it really in earnest from other sites. You know, of course, I'm not sitting on a high horse about this. I've done it for years and years and years. So like, I'm not judging anyone, but I'm just saying that like, I think there are more ways in which Game of Thrones spoilers are getting out there as more sites see the click value of it. And more sites, I will get on my high horse about this, more sites are irresponsible about what they put in their headlines and what they put in their header photos. I really try, like, so hard to word a headline in a way that it won't spoil people. Whereas, like, another site will just be like, so-and-so actor who you haven't seen in several seasons is on set. I'm just like, well, I mean, maybe someone didn't want to know that. And so just like, just take the time to word it vaguely and give them a spoiler warning at the top and then let them decide for themselves what they see and what they don't see. Like, I just think that's fair. And, you know, like we give a spoiler warning at the top of this podcast, like, to put that information out there without a spoiler warning, I think is really kind of nasty, to be honest with you. So yeah. What do you think?
I agree. You know, you can't knock the hustle. People got to get them clicks. But it is, it's one thing that I think we have always found very common ground on in the way that we cover Game of Thrones spoilers on our respective publications, which is, there's always, it's funny because I actually stole this from Joanna a long time ago, the idea of putting like a, having like a spoiler gif to put in the middle of the article before the spoilers start. She uses a number of great ones from all kinds of different Game of Thrones people. Which one's your favorite though?
The Night's King one. Nice. I think. Because it looks like he's kind of shrugging, like, spoilers, they're coming.
I used to have Walter White Walker, which was this art that somebody did where it's half Walter White, half a White Walker. And then I also have, Oberyn warning you of spoilers. But it's good to always kind of have that, because there are people that, as we've discovered in our Game of Thrones podcasting life, that don't really want those production spoilers, which, you know, it's tough. I think as long as you're trying to warn people, but I do think, yeah, you're right. This year it seems to be a little bit more Wild West out there as far as like major publications publishing stuff. So
I think the third element actually that's making people more anxious is, you know, last season we were a lot off book, but you know, the three of us would always argue there was still a lot that was from the books in the season. Next season is just even more off book, or at least a book we haven't seen yet. And I know a lot of people, including like friend of the show, Brendan Blackfish, who's like, you know what? I'm out on spoilers this year. Like, no, he's not being like, you know, pissy about it or anything like that. He's just like, you know what? In the past, I've been like, yeah, bring on all the spoilers because I know the books, so I don't care. And this year, he's just made the decision not to. And I imagine that, I mean, I know from my point of view, either due to competition, like scurrilous competition that uses super spoilery headlines, or due to people not wanting to know, my Game of Thrones spoiler posts don't do as well as they used to. And yeah, so I just think it's a combination of that, a combination of more people doing it and less people wanting to know. I think
that makes sense. So be careful out there, friends of the pod, and read the right people who will not lead you astray. And also, don't believe everything you read on the internet, according to Entertainment Weekly.
Entertainment Weekly, I mean, like, you know, much love to them for their business model. But I think it's pretty clear. I'm trying to say this with as little rancor as possible. I think it's pretty clear that they are in the business of doing favors for HBO. And I think that HBO has asked them to write this. And basically what their Game of Thrones author wrote was like, hey, last year, and he was right. He's like, last year when the actress who played Shay, Sabelka Kelly, visited set, they threw in a costume and people took photographs and they were confused. And that's true. We chased our tail all last year being like, but why is Shay there, right?
Is it a dream?
Yeah. And apparently that was them fucking with photographers. So I believe that they would do something like that. But I mean, you know, to try to extend that logic to these extensive, like, no spoilers, but extensive, like, beach, let's say, scenes, like, footage that we've seen, stairways footage that we've seen, like, you know, that's preposterous. That's not faked. So, you know, it's true. I'm sure that there are going to be a few faked things that come out, but the bulk of what we've seen is just, is some sneaky photographers in Spain. What's interesting to me, can I say, like, an actual spoiler now?
Yeah. Spoiler warning.
Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning within a spoiler warning. What's interesting to me is it almost seems like the cast has kind of given up. For example, over the weekend, like a couple Game of Thrones partying photos went up online. And there was a photo of Emilia Clarke and Kit Harington and Natalie Emmanuel partying. And like, those of us who are up on spoilers know that Kit Harington and Emilia Clarke are filming together, but like people who don't wouldn't. And you know, and I feel like in the past, Emilia Clarke would be like, would not post a photo of herself with Kit Harington.
Yeah.
Those would be under wraps. But she's like, well, you know what? That fucking footage is out everywhere. So you know what? Cat's out of the bag. Here's a cute photo of us out with the Chemical Brothers.
I guess that's the other question, which is the show, is the production a little more lax this year? Because I do feel, and I think we talked about this at the end of last season, where it was like, I don't know if they really have a whole lot to hide this year, like the Jon Snow thing. Like there isn't a big cliffhanger, and there are some things that we assume would happen at some point that we're see, like the you know, Jon Snow and Daenerys meeting. I mean, that has to happen at some point. Unless one of them were to get killed, which we don't really see reason in, at least in the next season. So for those of us who have been following it, I feel like maybe the show is not as concerned. Or it's a cyclical thing like you just described, where it's the stuff's out there. So now they're just like, nah, it doesn't matter. We'll just post some pictures of us partying because we're fun. We're friends. We're enjoying the last 2 years of this thing.
Yeah, you know. I would have to say it's almost a relief for them.
I would imagine, you know? For Kit Harington, at least.
Yeah. So
poor guy.
Yeah. Kit Harington's like, please don't make me do this again. I had to lie to everyone for a year. Let me just go out with Emilia Clarke and live my life. Right. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay, so speaking of actual spoilers, I do have one, and this is one that was pointed out to us today on Twitter in a way that was of saying Dave's going to be really excited about this.
Ooh.
There is a report from Watchers on the Wall in which sources said that Mark Gatiss will be returning to the show as Tycho Nestoris, and he will be making a trip to King's Landing to talk to Cersei about the crown's debts.
Yeah, that's right. Got to settle those debts. Can't just plant that egg and then leave it there for the entire series. Got to wrap it up.
And the report from Watchers who have been both very, they've been restrained to in a lot of their reporting, I think, and they always come, when they decide to go out with something, it seems that they only go out with stuff that they are very sure of, at least at the moment. And they say, and they bolded this. This was an article from one of their writers. They bolded this part. We've learned that Cersei's way of dealing with the debt will have substantial ramifications on the story. So whatever that means.
I really hope that, like, she just, like, her new thing is just to burn everyone. She's like, yeah, I'm going to get right on that. Meanwhile, can you go into that room over there? No reason. Ignore the green pots of goo. It's fine. Yeah, I hope she just, like, burns everyone all the time now. Yeah,
I mean, I guess the question is if she rebuffs the Iron Bank, as we, I guess, would assume, based on the many years that we've known this character, then maybe they will align with someone else that's coming up along. Because the Iron Bank does like to play favorites in Westerosi election politics. Their bias is showing. So we'll see if they switch sides.
Yeah, this is definitely partisan, for sure.
All right, so that's... I'm sure there's other stuff out there, but that's really all I wanted to talk about today. We'll save some
stuff. I feel like I let everybody talk about spoilers like maybe a bad thing for a good period of time here.
Oh, Dave's like, I was restrained. Well, the other thing I want to say is that... the director list was announced, and which we already know who was directing, but Watchers published who's directing which episodes. So it's Jeremy Podesta was directing the first one, then Mark Millard has 2 and 3. And since Mark Millard has been on set for, like, some of the ambush stuff, the like Greyjoy ambush stuff on the beach and stuff like that, we think that that's going to be very early in the season, episode 2 or 3. Matt Shackman, who is the Always Sunny in Philadelphia director, the, like, comedy director that they've hired this season, he's got episode 4 and 5. A lot of people thought he would only have one episode, but he's actually directing 2. And then episode 6 is Alan Taylor. Alan Taylor only has 1 episode. And he did Baylor in season 1. So he's got some experience with doing the penultimate episodes. So remember, episode 6 this year is going to be like the episode 9. So he's got, like, potentially the big episode. And then episode 7 is Jeremy Podesta again. So
that's interesting. Who was the director that was on set for the Tyrion, Gendry, Davos stuff?
I don't know. You brought that up last week and I didn't know the answer. So I still don't know the answer.
Yeah, I feel like there was one where they were like, and this director was on set for that. And I was like,
I think it's Mark Millard and Matt Shackman have been, like, the ones that have been spotted around the beach stuff, which is, like, a Tyrion stuff. And so that could be 2, 3, 4, or 5. So we don't know. Okay. Somewhere in the middle, early middle, right? So
I feel like those, they could just put those two guys on set for everything.
Right.
And it's like, well, it could be any part of half the season.
Yep, exactly. For, like, Alan Taylor's big episode, they're like, hey, Millard and Shackman, can you go fly over to Spain for a second? Thanks.
Right.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
To my knowledge, in everything that I've been following, Alan Taylor has not yet been spotted on set. So let's just assume that that whole episode's going to be inside somewhere.
Yes. Inside the Bank of Bravos.
Inside the Bank of Bravos. Yes. Dave, there's hope.
A bottle episode for Dave.
All right,
let's
cool.
go over the books in long form. Long scroll unrolls.
Or it's inside Dave's... the Maester Citadel in Old Town.
Yep, I just settled in with my mead.
This is just
everything will be fine.
what's it? What, who's the guy who's playing the maester?
Broadbent.
Jim Broadbent. So it's just like a whole Jim Broadbent episode. It'll be great.
Be fantastic.
Nice.
Anyway, guys, you know, every time we say Jim Broadbent's name three times, we have to take an ad break. So let's do that. Guys, apparently the way we use all of our technology are going to bring out our horrible human flaws and set us against each other. At least if I learned anything from season three of Black Mirror, it was that. I know we talked a little bit with Joanna on Fighting in the War Room, this other podcast, about Nosedive that kicked off this series. But series three of Black Mirror is a whopping 6 episodes, which is as much as series 1 and 2. For when it aired in the UK a year apart, we kind of got them in a chunk when Black Mirror sort of hit stateside. And through word of mouth, I think most of us here, I don't know, I'm not going to speak for everybody. I got turned on through Black Mirror when somebody said, you have to watch this episode called The National Anthem. It's the first episode. If you don't get how fucked up and in an awesome way this series is, then you don't have to watch the rest. But I did, and then immediately watched the rest. Neil, how did you end up on the Black Mirror train?
It's funny because I felt like before I watched any of Black Mirror, a lot of people had told me that they did not like the national anthem, which you know, because the subject matter is gross, I guess, because that's the one with the pig, right?
Yes. Okay. The Prime Minister has to have sex with the pig.
So, I think I actually started watching, I'm not going to admit to doing anything illegal, but I found Black Mirror before it came to Netflix.
I also did somehow, so stumbled across
just
it
stumbled
somewhere.
Upon it in some way, because it was actually very hard to find back in, even like 2014, it was kind of tough to find. But I had, I believe it was a Game of Thrones-ish connection, where I was sort of going through different shows that I wanted to watch that had a lot of people that I was interested in, and somebody recommended Black Mirror, and I started with Be Right Back, the one with Hayley Atwell and Domhnall Gleeson, and watched series 2, then went back and found series 1, then watched the White Christmas special, which I think might be my favorite episode because it's truly messed up. And I think just what hooked me about Black Mirror is not even necessarily the technological aspect of it. Like I do enjoy futurism, especially like near futurism. But what I love about it is kind of the narrative structure of the first 30 minutes of every episode you spend asking yourself, like, what the hell am I watching? And then the last 30 minutes of the episode, you find it kind of unraveling and unfolding in clever ways. And I feel like even it's some of its lesser episodes still do that. And it always struck me as a great example of how to use twist storytelling in a way that feels like it has more substance than just like tacking on something at the end that is a twist.
Yeah.
So I've been into it since probably about a year after series 2 premiered, and I slowly but surely collected all the episodes from various sources.
Yeah, I also do this thing periodically where I ask my like British followers on Twitter, like, what British show do I not know about yet that I should know about? And they were all banging on about Black Mirror for a long time before it came here. So thank you, British followers, for keeping me hip to this stuff. So I watched the first 2 seasons. I think the first 2 seasons are really hit and miss. And for me, the pig fucking one is not a highlight, even though I really like, Rory's
Kinnear.
Kinnear. Yeah. He's a genius and he played the Prime Minister. And, there are parts of it I like. It's not nearly as bad as the Waldo thing that was
the Waldo moment.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull up.
that's the worst one.
I'm gonna pull up these episode titles so I stop like just making them up. But I will say that my favorite, the entire History of You, which is the Toby Kebbell memory one, and Be Right Back, which is Donald Gleason and Hayley Atwell, are amazing. But I think the one that stuck with me most was 15 Million Merits, which has got Jessica Brown Findlay from Downton Abbey and Danielle Kaluuya. I don't know if I pronounce his last name appropriately. But that's the one where they're like stuck in this thing and they get merits and then there's like a talent show and it's just like, it's awful and harrowing and, one of the things, of course, that Black Mirror shows us is the way that which the technology we're already familiar with could become even more integral to us and then backfire in a terrible way. And like the way in which whenever there's like an ad I can't close on that I just endure on the internet, I think of poor Daniel Kaluuya, like in his room with the walls, like the fully digitized walls with all the ads for like porn that he can't close because he doesn't have enough merits to close them. And it's just like awful, awful, awful. And I'm just like, I could see us getting there. We're like, we're becoming so conditioned to be like, oh yeah, okay, I'm going to watch this ad autoplay in front of this YouTube video, whatever. It's fine, but like eventually, or like while I'm pumping gas, I have to watch like Jimmy Fallon, whatever. But like eventually, is that going to be everywhere? And that's exactly what Black Mirror wants to do, is be like, eventually, is this technology going to be everywhere and then do something terrible for you? So, so that's my experience with seasons 1 and 2. And it's also what I really loved about it. It was a really good way to explore British talent that was like the exact kind of level that I like exploring, because this is like, I think this is before Hayley Atwell was like really Agent Carter, or like maybe after she was first Agent Carter, before she was like whatever. It was before Donald Gleason sort of like exploded. They tend to cast people who are sort of like up and coming, the way that like the British Miss Marple and Poirot does as well. And, you know, it's just a treat to go back and watch these people do, these episodes. And it's something I kind of object to the new season. I feel like the faces are just a little bit more starry and familiar. This started with John Hamm. But this has to do with like my question about the Americanization, the Netflixization of Black Mirror, since Netflix is now like co-producing. There's a bigger budget. There are slightly bigger names attached, that sort of thing. So whether that's to the benefit or the detriment, we can decide. But I, in my hipster snobby way, miss when I watch Black Mirror. Yeah, I'll say it, bootlegged from England. you know, so yeah. What do you think, Dave?
I mean, for me, the Netflixization of series 3, or however we're going to put it, is a step in the correct direction, because not that I don't love the British method of television and how it can, I think, really empower a storyteller like Charlie Brooker, who is, you know, has writing credits on all of the episodes, at least partial writing credits or story by credits in the case of Nosedive. But considering it's coming from one writer and it's not necessarily like a room, I think that giving it the latitude of an anthology series to do more and not necessarily do things much differently, but just more, I think allows for a greater freedom of variance. So it's kind of like with American Horror Story, I feel like an anthology series, if it is about, you know, finding these performances or chewing on these ideas, should have some latitude to be bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Of course, latitude. Everything should have latitude to be bad.
And I think that, like, for something like ending series 2 on the Waldo moment, and that being like the last thing that you have to have for a while, is like, And so it was nice to have, you know, 6 whole episodes this time to digest, and not any of them necessarily as bad as that one. So even if there was a pit in my stomach, it was usually because a particular episode of series 3 ended in a way that was supposed to give me a pit in my stomach, and I had to like pause before going on to the next one. But then it like reverses in something like San Junipero, where it's like super happy at the end of it, and for once, you know, technology kind of works out for everybody and everybody's cute and well performed. So I'm kind of,
if you're an optimist, I was told on Twitter that I shouldn't be so quick to proclaim San Junipero as positive, because it's basically this idea that you are basic. You're giving up whatever belief structure you have of a soul. You're giving that up in some sort of clone digital form, and that's there's a little darkness in there if you pull it apart. But
I think there definitely is, like, especially when you get to, I mean, like, you know, these two are living happily ever after together in theory, but what if they break up? You know, then it is, you know. Because we're basing their, like, quote unquote soulmate status on whatever on, like, what, three encounters, four, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so she's making, you know, let's just talk about it, right? Gugu Mbatha, the Roz character, and people hate when I use actors' names. So let's say the black half of this couple, she, cause I don't know her character's name. She's choosing to give up her belief in a possible afterlife, her attachment to mortality.
Oh, her name is Yorkie.
Yorkie. To be with this... To
oh,
be
no,
this,
wait. No, Yorkie's
yeah. Mackenzie Davis. Kelly yeah. is the other one. Sorry.
Kelly. So Kelly Kapowski. No, Kelly is giving up her, like, whatever, to be this woman who she's hung out with four times. And, like, I believe that they'll be together for a while, maybe forever. But if they break up, then is one of them going to have to, like, go find her thrills in that, like, horror warehouse place where, like, people were just, like... dead inside and you know, like, I do think that there is darkness.
Yeah, I guess it raises more questions as to, like, how expansive is the internal workings of San Junipero, the city? Like, can you drive outside the city? Is it a whole world that's built up? You know, I think, to me, like, if it's a clone of, like, different worlds, it's almost like if there's a bunch of West worlds inside this afterlife simulator, then I don't know, I'd stay there. And even if I broke up with my soulmate, I would go find other things to do. But I'm a pragmatist, so who knows?
Yeah, I think it's the pragmatism thing, because, like, you're like, well, they, you know, gave up their belief in a soul to, like, embrace electronics. And I'm like, I feel like I did that 5 years ago.
Well, I mean, I'm an atheist, right? So I don't believe in an afterlife, but even if I don't believe in an afterlife, I believe in mortality, and I believe that mortality means that the life we live means more, right? Like, we all can see that the fact that it ends eventually means that the life you're living is more important. And to a future where you live forever as your youngest, cutest self, and, you know, is, I don't know, questionable. But that being said,
I'd totally do it.
I'd go to the 90s decade every single time.
Aren't we just talking about a tech heaven? You're like, if you had the option to live in any time period you want as your young, attractive self for eternity, would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are we just talking about a consequence-free heaven? So why not embrace that if it's in your want?
But what if the power goes out? I guess is the big question.
Well, then it's just like, I don't know, like, you died anyway, right?
I had a lot of questions at the end of this episode. Because I was like, ooh, I want to do that. But then the analytical part of my brain fired up and was like, wait, but, like, what if someone turns it off? Or, like, what if the funding gets cut to this project? Or, like, what if there's a nuclear winter in the real world? So lots of questions.
I have a weird nitpicky question. Well, first I will say a positive thing about San Junipero, which was not actually my favorite episode of the season, but, like, the positive thing I will say, and this I have to say because I am your resident social justice warrior, is a lot of people are pointing out that it's rare these days to have a lesbian love story that ends happily. And that's true.
Mm.
You know, there was a big controversy this last year over shows like The 100 and The Walking Dead for, like, falling into this trope that I had sort of hoped was over, which was sort of like the lesbian, kill the lesbians
gay,
once they
doomed.
Find happening. Yeah. If you're a lesbian and you get happily into a relationship, you're super dead. So that is a trope on TV and film, and an unfortunate one. and San Junipero does not play into it. So that's...
I will say that I also felt this episode is a good example of... It kind of goes against... Like, I understand what you're saying about, like, when you watch the previous seasons of the show, it was nice to be able to discover talent that was sort of undiscovered to a great... you know, to a certain extent. But I feel like there are a lot of, especially in the filmmaking talent that we saw, and then, but also some of the actors, like there were a lot of actors in this that I don't get to see enough of. It was kind of nice. Like, you don't get to see them do enough interesting projects, or you want to see them do more. Like, Mackenzie Davis is a really good example, because very few people seem to watch Halt and Catch Fire, and she's really great on that. Felt the same way about Wyatt Russell. It does still feel like there are less, but there are pockets of talented people in this that should be doing more and bigger things. And I felt the same way about Faye Marseille as well. It's like, man, I don't see Faye Marseille in enough stuff outside of...
there are still people, since this is a Game of Thrones podcast originally, like, there are still people who don't know that that is Faye Marseille in that episode.
It took me a minute, I'll be honest.
They've never seen her with long hair.
We're talking about Blue and Hated in the Nation, right? In case people were still not on board.
Sorry, yeah, so she's in the last episode, and Faye Marseille, of course, played the Waif. And the Waifinator, and a lot of people didn't really like her character, but like it distressed me, because I think Faye Marseille is so charming. She's in the movie Pride. She's so good. She was in a great episode of Doctor Who. Nope, that's not true. That episode wasn't great. She was great in it. And and she's pretty good in this. Like, she's got less to do in this, but like her character is sort of a little one note. But and that episode also, I think, has a happy ending.
It took me a minute until there is...
Well, despite the fact that they killed off like a third of the population,
like hundreds of thousands of people died. But I did think it was funny. I didn't realize that that was Faye Marseille until there was a running scene.
So funny.
I was like, oh my God, she's doing the Waif run. And then I felt really bad funny. Because I should have known that, because I know who Faye Marseille is. I would say, I know we're kind of jumping around, but I want to talk about this episode a little bit. Yeah, super dark. I don't know if I would say positive. It worked out well for I guess justice is done at the end of Hated in the Nation. But I talked to a lot of people who didn't like this one, I think because of the bees thing. Like, they thought there was a certain implausibility to like bees. Like, why didn't somebody just put on a helmet? It's like, come on, man. Like, if that's your one little nitpick. But man, I really this was a really great little actor showcase. There's just some great performances in this one.
Yeah, I liked it because it was a procedural. I unfortunately called the bees because there's a drift shot to an open window in the first kill, and I'm like, oh god damn it, it's those robot bees, because everything else was normal and I knew I was watching Black Mirror at this point. But that being said, yeah, it's like a character piece, you know, I don't like Brave, but I don't mind Kelly McDonald's and Benedict Wong popping up, also great. But yeah, I mean, it was more an exercise in plotting and how they're going to pull it along, which I've been watching, you know, Elementary's new season, and it sort of felt like Hated in the Nation sort of went to an Elementary place. And then, of course, killer robot bees would be an Arrow plot line, and then I think killer robot butterflies were a season one Fringe plot line. So I was primed for the killer robot stuff. I just think that when it came to beyond plotting like a procedural, like having like a central killer, I think muddied the issue of the whole hashtag Death 2 movement. So it's like, you know, there was enough blame to spread around to everybody, but then it sort of came back to crazy James Bond villain type of person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I preferred it when it was like, you know, more examining the sort of John Ronson shame aspect of social media. And I like what I sort of had the idea of and sort of wish it were is somehow like the proliferation of tweets was like the tweets themselves were messing with the programming rather than a person was like controlling this. Exactly what Dave says. Like, I wish it were just like somehow directly pegged to our actions as humans and what we were typing on the internet. Learning. Yeah, the bees are just like misinterpreting this as an actual command somehow. I don't know. But I will say that like when they were in that farmhouse and the bees were coming in from like all angles and they're trying to stop up the gaps and stuff like that, I thought that was genuinely good television. I agree with you. It's definitely an Arrow plot line, but but well, with Kelly McDonald instead. So
that,
you know,
cabin plug up the things is an X-Files plot line where they cut into the trees with the green glowing bugs that they have to keep at. It's a plot line that's done a lot. They construct it well in this good way with, but like Neil said, it's like an actor's showcase that didn't hit as my favorite of the season, but I liked it. Actually, there's not one I didn't like, except, I don't know, something about Playtest and Men Against Fire.
I hated Men Against Fire.
We should talk about Men Against Fire.
Let's do it. Neil, what do you want to talk about with Men Against Fire? This is the episode where the soldiers have implants that make them see enemy combatants as monsters.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Joanna and I had talked about this before I sat down to watch them, to watch the screeners, and I was kind of asking her about them, and this was the one where she's like, nope. And I don't remember, Joanna, did you watch the whole thing? Or was this the one that you were I turned it off?
I did turn it off, and then you'd like tweet something about like Men Against Fire has a cool twist. Watch it. So that I watched, like, not to me, but just to the general world. And then I watched it and I was like, yeah, that's sorry. This is gonna be rude. That's the twist I thought it was gonna be, and I wasn't interested. So I still hated it.
Well,
but I did finish it on your recommendation.
Based on our conversation beforehand, I was convinced. I went into it being like, great, here's the dud. And I guess that allowed me to be pleasantly surprised by the twist, but like pleasantly surprised that the twist was at least somewhat clever in that episode, because it is a grating kind of episode where it's about mostly bad people, and it is, they're killing monsters, and you sort of feel, I do think the one thing, I'm of two minds on this with Black Mirror. One, it is great to be able to sit down and watch a season of television with six completely new stories that I really didn't know what to expect going in. But two, you're looking for the turn at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that there was something wrong, something amiss with them killing these roaches, quote unquote, I kind of felt like, oh man, this is like an ethnic cleansing thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, especially since it was like taking place in like Eastern Europe or something like that, right? Like, that gives you the ethnic cleansing vibe,
because
it felt like Romani or whatever. So
yeah, and it's one thing that that Black Mirror does not seem to do is you know, it's a sci-fi show, but it's never done like monsters,
right?
Yeah, it's always, humans are always responsible for this.
Right.
So when it was like, it was basically vampires for the first 30 minutes, and I was like, it's not going to be vampires.
Probably not, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Like, at worst, I guess it might have been like a 28 days later thing where it was like a vaccine gone wrong. But, yeah, it makes sense, I guess. It's not the best episode of the season, I think. It does still have something to say.
Yeah, I thought the ending was pretty poignant.
Mm-hmm.
Like the very, very end, like the last scene. And Malachi Kirby, who played the lead, he was like, he was in the Roots reboot that they did earlier this year, and he was so good in that. So like, I find watching him generally entrancing. Mm-hmm. But like, there was just too much, I don't know, too much, like, I think a lot of it also had, it had like Playtest, it had a video game aesthetic that I was just sort of like, oh, I'm not here for this, you know. It had like this first person shooter stuff going on that just doesn't really work for me. And, you know, and Charlie Brooker, who is the showrunner, like, used to work in video games. Like, video games really do inform a lot of his storytelling in Black Mirror. And, like, that's true also of, like, 50 Million Credits, like, the one that I really liked. But with stuff like Playtest, which I didn't love, and even though we love Dan Trachtenberg, and this one, Men Against Fire, like, didn't really work for me. My favorite by far was Nosedive. I just thought that episode was huge. And like, it's interesting. We talked about it on Fighting in the War Room 2 weeks ago. And at the time I was the only woman on that podcast who had seen it. Katie hadn't seen it yet. Then Katie watched it subsequently and also just loved it so much. And the idea that I brought up on the episode, because I was talking about it with David Ehrlich and Matt Patches, and Dave was pretty quiet, but there, was
good
that
job,
in
Dave.
My, I just always want you to talk more on Fighting the Worm, because I think you're interesting. I think there might be a gendered thing associated with Nosedive, honestly. Rashida Jones is one of the, like, Michael Schur and Rashida Jones wrote it, and Joe Wright directed it, and I really do think that while all of us are guilty of placing too much value on, or perhaps presenting a false front on social media, I think for women, there's just something a little extra that goes with that notion of putting on a public face and being judged by appearance. And so Katie and I, so I've got at least one woman corroborating me on this. Katie Rich is like obsessed with that episode, as obsessed as I am. I think Bryce Dallas Howard is incredible. I got to interview her about it. That's up on vanityfair.com if you want to read it. And which was a crazy interview. Like, she told me about the time that Lars von Trier threw a water bottle at her on the set of Manderley, trying to get her to get angry, and how she's always had trouble getting angry in her roles, and how when it's comedy, for some reason, it's easier. And that's what Nosedive presented for her, and how it was like this huge cathartic thing to do this big angry meltdown, which she does. I have my questions about the season, but the fact that it gave me Nosedive, which to me is like maybe the best Black Mirror episode I've ever seen, that's a big plus. So
I'm trying to run the experiment with my girlfriend, who the Black Mirror is not her thing, but Joe Wright is her thing, and I have a feeling like this episode might be a la carte something that she could enjoy at Black Mirror. I've been trying really hard, and I've been trying to sell it to her without giving stuff away, but I've been unsuccessful. But I'm going to endeavor forward.
We believe in you.
I think you're onto something. Thank you.
I also, you know, and that's an impression that I got of Nosedive when I watched it as well. Not as a female, obviously, but as someone who just, I have an intimate-ish understanding of how women interact on social media and how their social media experience is very different than mine in a lot of ways. And I think it's something that is this. It's funny. I went through all six episodes and I was like, all right, what's the most socially relevant one? And I almost feel like Nosedive is that one. You know, we've been in this election in the United States, and you see a lot of the criticism of the female candidate in the race, of being guarded, of being
someone smiling too much or not smiling enough.
Right, or someone who has a public opinion and a private opinion and has to put on a public face versus the man who can just tell it like it is and everybody loves him. I think that Nosedive actually speaks to that more than any of the sort of direct parody I've seen of the election, where it's like, you know,
or even of the Waldo moment, which is a ton closer now that the Anthony Weiner thing,
right,
like syncs up to the 15-year-old girl thing.
Yeah. I think that they really kind of nailed thematically this idea of also just social media and the way that we judge people, the way that we recalibrate people's worth based on social media in a lot of ways. And I think that it's an extremely dangerous thing to do, but it's an easy trap to fall into. So I thought, I think Nosedive is probably the episode of this season that has the most to say. I wouldn't necessarily classify it as the most messed up. It's definitely the most fun. And
you're
ultimately rooting for her about two thirds of the way through the episode. You're rooting for the meltdown. You're just like, I just want to see her lay down some F-bombs and be happy. Like, I want to see her realize that she doesn't need to have 4.9 stars to be happy.
Yeah, Yes.
So
you're rooting for her to be free all the while you're like, how many likes did I get on this photo I put on Instagram today? Like,
right.
You know, as Katie pointed out, for her, the moment that the episode really clicked was the, like, basically when she gets in the cab and rates the guy, and, like, we already do that with Uber, right? Like, that's already a thing that exists. So, I give every Uber driver 5 stars. I just do.
Yeah, I do too. I do think that it's funny. There's a South Park episode, the Yelp review South Park episode is what this reminded me of. Because it brings out potentially brings out the worst in people. You know, like if you have a bad experience, which, and I think my views on this are always skewed by my many, many years working in the service industry. It depends on your level of empathy for the person that is helping you. You know, like your level of empathy for someone who's trying to earn a living driving for Uber, or someone who, you know, works at customer service desk at a Best Buy or something like that. If you have empathy for people like that, you're never going to like get on Yelp or take a customer survey and just twist the knife. But there are people that do that all the time. And I think this sort of brings out the sadistic qualities that, that exist very prominently in a lot of people that only come out in those specific situations where they're like, man, I really need to stick it to this Uber driver to make myself feel better.
Yeah.
Personally, I just can't do it. So
I know, like, and I over tip for that same reason all the time.
Man, you guys are really nice. I mean, I've written long blog posts about people that I feel wronged me in business senses, and like that's totally. I guess for me though, the danger that Nosedive presents is treating everybody's opinion as if it has the same weight, or putting an artificial system in place to pretend like that you know, like respect and empathy shouldn't be the basis on how much you value somebody's opinion. So in that sense, I think it really connects to this year's crazy American election cycle, in the sense that, like, you know, there are people that are able to have educated opinions about both sides, and there are people that are able to yell about both sides, and you could take it all in, but I think weighting them all the same is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Yeah, I hadn't even really thought about that. That's so true. And so then you just feel trapped in this prison of like having to be nice to everyone. I mean, like the scene that drove me the craziest was the airport scene. Like that lady at the airport desk is like my number one enemy, because like Bryce wasn't even like, we've all had terrible things happen at the airport, and we've all had like the person at the desk whose job it is to just sort of like pivot and like, I'm sorry, but you know, and pivot, and you're like, oh my God, but I've been in this airport for 12 hours or whatever. So those frustrations happen, but like, you need to be able to be like frustrated. You can't, like, it's okay to not be like super rude and crazy about it, but like to be frustrated and upset about it is, I was so anxious in that scene. Yeah. I was like, let her be a human. Oh my God. No.
She has her brother who knows how to like sarcastically rate her, but she could also be like honest with. And so that's more like, you know, she's weighted that opinion correctly, where it's like, even though he doesn't have to rate her 5 stars, but she doesn't expect him to rate him 5 stars or necessarily rate every conversation. It's more like a pivot point. Whereas like at the airport, it's like not only all of a sudden that woman has the power to call the security guard to have the penalty put on that starts like the big cliff off, where it feels like that should be a multi-person like thing.
Yeah.
It's just frightening. Ugh. Technology is horrible. Playtest, however.
Yeah, let's pivot to playtest.
Let's talk about the most messed up one of the season.
How much better would playtest be if it were Owen Wilson, a young Owen Wilson instead of Wyatt Russell?
Oh, that wasn't young Owen Wilson?
Okay, sorry.
I mean, I like that. I think that he's like doing like a millennial dude, which I've always seen like manifested in actual people. So I really quickly was like, oh, that's some guy who grew up watching The Big Lebowski and is now like living what he thinks that is.
The I need to go find myself dude.
Yeah, exactly. But I think Playtest for me was the most Twilight Zone episode, in the fact that I kind of wish it just was a Twilight Zone episode, because I feel like the Black Mirror part had me looking for the level that I was going to be twisted at the end. And when it became apparent that I was going to have maybe a couple of these reveals behind me, I think I completely detached from the narrative whatsoever. So we spent a little bit of time with the Wyatt Russell character to hear Alzheimer's sob story, which is horrible, but then the episode is so, I guess, into its corporate espionage plot and technology hook and him doing whatever performance that can supposedly withstand this mysterious horror game that all emotional stakes kind of got disconnected from me, which is fine because some of the best Twilight Zone episodes are just watching people screw themselves deeper into the ground because they made one bad decision. But I feel like this one could have kept me more in the Alzheimer's headspace instead of dipping at it at the beginning and the end.
Yeah, it's...
Well, what I was going to say is I really don't mean to just be shamelessly plugging my own stuff, but I talked to Dan Trachtenberg about this episode, and he said, which you can read about at vanityfair.com, and he said that the Wyatt Russell character originally, as they wrote it, was actually supposed to be kind of like a guy you're not rooting for at all, and you want him to have a comeuppance. Mm-hmm. And but Wyatt was just such like a fun, nice guy, and like they did a lot of improv, that he ended up being a guy that you're kind of... Like, I didn't want Wyatt Russell to wind up brain dead, right? And so, I mean, that's complicated because, you know, Black Mirror should be able to inflict horrors on good guys. Like, it shouldn't just be bad guys who get horrific endings. But something about that episode just didn't quite track to me. Like, I didn't feel like, yeah, he took a photo that he shouldn't have or whatever, and that's why his phone was on, and that's ultimately why he died. But, like... To me, it didn't quite track that character winds up brain dead forever. Do you know, like
from an emotional standpoint? Like,
I don't know. It wasn't satisfying, even in a like, oh no, sort of way. Like, I just didn't feel tragically satisfied or pleasingly satisfied by that episode.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that does happen to Black Mirror is that it will get distracted sometimes by one element of the story. So. The horror game, like the realism of trying to like pick out what is real, what's not real, you know, especially when the girl shows up inside the game. And I was like, initially I was like, oh, that's not real. And then, you know, she stabs him or whatever and it looks real. And you're like, oh, maybe this is real. And it got too distracted by that. And then all of a sudden at the end, it's, you know, it's the... How many levels of Inception deep are we? And it's, you know, pulling out a dream within a dream within a dream within a dream, finally to like, oh, he's brain dead because, and he's only been under for like, you know, 0.4 milliseconds or whatever.
Yeah, that seemed to be like supposed to be the like, whoa moment. Like, it's only been a few seconds, but like,
which is, I guess, scientifically, that makes a little sense because isn't it that your dreams seem like a long time when you're dreaming, but it's really only a few, you know, moments?
Sure. But I mean, like, this is a plot contrivance, whereas like a probing of somebody's psyche would have looked completely different than right. Being like, I'm testing this game. This game has a penis spider that has the face of my like high school bully, which is reaching in that direction, but it's not, I think, the ultimate of where that direction could go.
Yeah, I feel like it should have been like Ghost Dad or something like that. You know, like, I hate Ghost Dad plot twists. We've talked about this before. But like, you know, his whole trauma has to do with his dad dying, right? And I know eventually it gets to like a memory loss level of fear. But like, for me, that game, instead of a CGI, I mean, maybe it was just the CG spider that like not enough polygons on it or whatever. But like, like, for me, it would have been much more emotionally harrowing to have, like, a really good conversation between two actors that wound up being very upsetting versus a spider, you know? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I wanted to like this episode. I really did.
Well, all the video game references I really like that are sort of layered into his psyche, the only one I caught up before having read up on it was the "Would you kindly" from BioShock when he's opening the last door and he thinks his mom's going to be in there.
Right.
But like that sort of thing is cool. And if that sort of thing was littered more throughout it and I could go back and revisit this episode as his psyche, I think in a way that was satisfying, that would be something different. But I don't feel like that's there. But I haven't done a rewatch yet, so maybe to be continued on that one.
Yeah. I think that really what was the most jarring, and it's the most messed up part of the episode, is that last like pull out where it's, you know, he goes brain dead. I think that that is the blessing. That is the curse of the episode. Like it's one level too many, but it's also the thing that most people in the audience will be like, oh man, that's so messed up. So I don't know.
Right.
It's hard to say that they shouldn't have done that, but if they didn't, I would have enjoyed the episode.
I think it was messed up enough that his mom was just like Alzheimer's calling him the whole time. And he wasn't picking up.
Man, dark.
All right. One more episode and then we're on our way out. Shut Up and Dance has got Joanna Robinson to cover up the cameras on her computers. Yeah. True or false?
True. I already had a camera cover for my desktop because Mr. Robot sent them out as like a promotional thing. So I don't think I would have even known they existed if USA hadn't sent one to me in the mail that's branded Mr. Robot. But I got one for my laptop because that episode. Not my favorite episode. Obviously, we've got Bronn from Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones is in it, and that's a treat for people. But not my favorite. I thought the reveal was pretty good. I didn't necessarily see the pedophilia twist coming. And you think this kid is like an innocent victim that you're rooting for, and you don't understand why he's doing all this just because of a masturbation video. Yeah, so I would say middle of the road for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. It really, the first part of the episode didn't track well for me because I was like, wait, really? He's going to go rob a bank because somebody has like a video of him jerking it?
Yeah.
Like, if that were me, I'd be like, yeah, go ahead. But then later when I realized that he was looking at like underaged porn, I was like, oh, yeah, that would be rough as a thing to do or get caught doing. So fairly middle of the road. I didn't like the little fight club thing. I was just, I don't know. This one was really nihilistic. Some of Black Mirror episodes are more nihilistic, some of them are less, and I feel like I gravitate towards the less nihilistic ones. So it was okay. I don't know. Jerome Flynn, that's another actor that I just want to see in more stuff. So I'm in for that.
I definitely dug the performances, but as soon as the episode ended, I was just like, I liked that better when it was called White Bear and it was in series two.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. White Bear was better.
Oh man. That is so much like White Bear.
Yeah. It did do more than any other Black Mirror episode has done, which is make me buy a tech prevention thing.
So it's the scariest one from a real standpoint.
I guess so. I was just sort of like, why don't I have a camera cover? Like I should have one.
Yeah. So the NSA can't get videos of you podcasting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Get that.
Release the video of you podcasting. Proving you're just a bag of cats.
All right,
guys. I think that was season three, series three. I'm sorry. A Black Mirror. It's going to be back. I think it's going to be
back. Series four is coming back in 2017.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. I feel like they did, they did this with the Get Down, too. I think they did, a long season that they're splitting, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so they're calling it series four, but it's all kind of part of the same.
Right.
Production run.
Yeah. So there's six more coming next year.
Very exciting.
Yes, we will be reconvening for that, most definitely. Neil, looking ahead, where are we heading next week?
Next week, we're going to the cinematic realms and the Sanctum Sanctorum of Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is in theaters this coming Friday, so get out there and see it if you want to talk about it. We'll obviously talk comics and things like that. Beyond that, it is now being rumored amongst the people who host this podcast that we may move Westworld up so that we can talk Westworld spoiler theories probably the week after Doctor Strange, but we'll keep you updated next week. But for now, your assignment heading into next week is to see Doctor Strange. And Dave and Joanna, do you guys have any Doctor Strange comics that people should read? Are there any like big ones?
There is an official prequel comic to the movie, which will tell the story about the previous inhabitant of the Sanctum Sanctorum before Stephen Strange shows up, if you want to keep it in the MCU.
And if you're listening to this on Wednesday, let's say late Wednesday, I have an interview with the costume designer for Doctor Strange up on Vanityfair.com. Lot of beautiful, beautiful robe work in this particular film. So check it out.
We'll tweet that from the thing.
Excellent.
The Twitter thing.
The Twitter thing. We'll tweet it from the Twitter thing. Let's do it.
Tweet it from the Twitter thing. Let's tell everybody where our other Twitter things are. Let's start with Joanna.
You can find me at Joe Wrote This. Talking about Westworld on Decoding Westworld or on VanityFair.com.
And Neil?
You can find me at FilmSchoolRejects.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Rejects. Follow the show on Twitter at Storm of Spoilers. And remember, you can email us if you want to talk Black Mirror or if you want to talk, give us your Westworld theories in advance. StormofSpoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E, blogging at geek.com, where I've been doing some Batman the Animated Series content because I rewatched all of that and it was awesome. And at Thrillist.com, where I've been doing stuff like the history of Ouija board and scary viral videos. And always the podcast at FightingInTheWarRoom.com. So until next week, guys, keep it strange out there and keep your eyes peeled for another Infinity Gemstone. Go. And I've lost the love, the one whom I adore. Let me tell you about a strange thing that happened to me.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right now.